Hello, my friends. This is Christopher Check, president of Catholic Answers. Welcome to another episode of Catholic Answers Focus. It is a privilege and an honor and a pleasure and all those other good things for me today to welcome into our studio the new host of Catholic Answers Live, Mr. Cy Kellett. Welcome, Cy.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Catholic Answers has – so this show, this episode of Catholic Answers Focus, we're calling Meet Cy Kellett.
Okay.
So it's almost anything is fair game.
Yes.
Okay. Maybe I should have cleared that with you beforehand.
No, I'm ready to go. I brought my favorite recipes. I'm also.
Oh, very good. Yeah. So first of all, it's not Cy, it's Cyril.
Well, yes.
Or Cyril.
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 Yeah, Cyril, for my father and my grandfather, yes. But I've gone by Cy my whole life.
And who's is Cyril of Alexandria, is he your patron?
I always feel like I claim all three of the great Cyrils. You know, there were three really impressive saints.
Oh, so good.
But I've never known why my grandfather has the name. I mean, it's not a common name among the Irish.
I was going to say, you're of Irish descent.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so.
People always think I'm like Slovak or Russian or something because of Cyril.
Yeah, you would find it among the Easterns.
Yeah,
right exactly.
Because of Cyril and Methodius.
Right, sure. The apostles to the Slavs.
Right.
Right, and where we get Cyrillic from.
Exactly, Cyrillic alphabet.
Yeah, we're running very far afield already. I'll tie that back into the fact that you studied English literature. Somehow.
Okay. All right.
Let's start with an easy one. You've been in Catholic media now for more than 20 years. You ran a Catholic diocesan paper. You worked for a bishop.
Right.
You worked at a diocese. You were the editor. What changes have you seen in Catholic media over your now several decade career?
Right. It's just a boom. I mean, I think it's just like the changes in all media. You know, the fact that there are so many media that are available that weren't available 20 years ago. So I even think some dioceses now are thinking, do we need the diocesan newspaper? Because that's a tradition in American dioceses.
I think some of them have already answered this question.
Yeah, right. And moving into other ways of communicating with their people. Whether it's websites or the direct mailing lists and all that kind of stuff, or emailing lists, but to me, I really think, and this is going to sound self-serving saying this a little bit, but I think radio has been one of the most magnificent things that's happened because it's a medium that catches people by surprise. You don't have to intend to go there,
right?
And I think it's doing amazing things. That there are, you probably know better than I do, but 350, almost 400 stations,
right.
Catholic stations across the United States in both English and Spanish, catching people in their cars in traffic. It's so exciting. I mean, we were. And when you run a Catholic newspaper, in many ways, you're speaking to the faithful who are already, you know, they're going to Mass on Sunday there. But Catholic radio is just grabbing people out of the car and saying, hey, God still loves you, you know.
Well, and of course, you are well aware of the superabundance of testimony that listeners from your time at Immaculate Heart Radio. We get the same kind of testimony here at Catholic Answers. I know EWTN does as well. That people's lives have been dramatically changed because of Catholic radio.
Right. Right. Dramatically. And also – but the other way is subtly too, because there's so many people of my generation. You know, I was born in 1964. Catechized in the 1970s.
Just for clarity, I'm younger than you.
Yeah. Oh, all right. And better looking. And so who were poorly catechized, and every bit that someone comes closer to the Lord, it's not a small thing. That's a big deal. That,
sure.
You know, we have the dramatic stories, but it's the daily coming closer to the Lord. I think that's the real story in many ways.
Oh, yeah. That daily journey. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right. So let's talk for a second about radio. I remember a conversation that I had with Father Rocky Hoffman, who runs Relevant Radio,
right.
Which now, of course, this magnificent merger that has been announced between IHR and Relevant. And I remember talking to him. It was probably about 5 years ago. I was in Illinois. I had just started working for Catholic Answers, but I hadn't moved out here yet. And Father Hoffman was convinced that AM radio is going to be around for a very long time.
Yeah.
I mean, I ask you this question because you mentioned there are dioceses who are thinking, do we still need a print edition of our newspaper? There are Catholic magazines not associated with a particular diocese that you know, are now out of print. Crisis magazine, for example, is exclusively
exactly right.
online presence. Catholic Answers, I think, is unusual in this regard because we're determined, in so far as we can, for as long as we can, to have a print edition, and I think there's a lot of merit to it. But Father Rocky was convinced AM radio is here for a long time, and if he's right, and I believe he's right, that experience that you describe of the person finding, especially in his car, we spent a lot of time in cars, finding Catholic radio and being surprised by it, then that's going to continue.
Yeah, and I think it's right. People, you know, since the advent of FM radio, the advent of television, I mean, advent of, oh, that's it. AM radio is done now. It's and AM radio just keeps picking up power. It's not done at all.
You know, I actually think that FM probably, or generally what we think of FM programming, I would put organizations like NPR in a separate category, but popular music, yeah. I think that actually is threatened because of things like Spotify, for example. Right. My boys are 23, 21, 19, and 12. They don't listen to the radio at all.
Right. My children never have. The same rough age as my children never have listened to the radio as a thing. And they've always plugged a device in, or I don't even know how they do it, frankly, some of the stuff.
Yes,
I mean,
yeah.
I just hear music coming from somewhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you're exactly right.
I mean, I don't think we know what's coming, but I do think AM is going to be around along. I think the talk format is going to be the Q&A format. I think that's going to be around for a long time. People feel drawn into Q&A programming.
Yes.
And it's
strangely much more intimate than television.
Oh, sure
it is. I'm sure you've thought about why that is. I imagine it has to do with the fact that your intellect is engaged in a way that television may not always do.
Your imagination, I think in some ways you're actually forced to pay attention more carefully. There's this horrible American phenomenon. I don't know if it's unique to Americans, maybe in Europe as well or all over the world, where that TV is on in the house kind of all the time.
Yeah.
It's that constant presence. But the actual act, you know, of sitting down and watching TV. And now I think they say that, pardon me, that when people are watching TV, they've also got some other kind of device or screen in their hands.
Again, my children are my guide on that, and it's I'm like, pick something.
Right.
Why do we have how many things can we have going here?
Yeah.
But it does to them. That's just how they do it. That's how they consume that stuff.
Yeah. Well, this is an interesting time because there are dangers certainly associated with this proliferation of communication technology, dangers to the imagination, dangers to social interaction. Dangerous to our relationship with God. You know, it's just hard for people to sit and be quiet.
Yep.
I find this in my own life. Here at Catholic Answers, as you know, we have Father Serpa exposes the Blessed Sacrament for us every Tuesday from 9 to 12, and then the staff has the opportunity to sit in there and just go be quiet with Jesus. I found it a lot easier 20 years ago to sit down and be quiet in front of the Blessed Sacrament. But now, because in my life I deal with so much different kinds of media throughout the day, there's sort of that enervating din that's always part of our lives. You have to force yourself, you know, to be quiet.
Yeah.
But in any case, well, very good. So you've been in Catholic media. You've seen it change dramatically. It presents something of a challenge. How does the good, and here I mean, you know, good, morally good, effective, entertaining, how does the good programming get heard in that proliferation of media, of information technology?
Yeah, the sheer number of choices that a person has at any moment. I mean, Jim Gaffigan does this comedy routine now about going to Netflix, turning it on, and just feeling inadequate.
Oh, right. I'll die before I get everything in my queue.
And then lying about it. Oh, yeah, sure, I've seen that. Or I'm not quite caught up. You know, like, that is how you feel about it. But there, I mean, in a certain way, I suppose, and maybe I hope this is not a cop-out answer because I do think I'm sincere about it. The Holy Spirit leads people to what they need if they will be open to it.
Yes.
I mean, we have to rely on that.
Yes.
Our, you know, as Doug Sherman, founder of Immaculate Heart Radio, always says that the truth is a lion. Right. Our job is let the lion out of the cage.
Right, right. Yeah, that's an excellent analogy. Well, we're certainly going to be doing that with you at the helm of Catholic Answers Live. We're just absolutely thrilled to have you here. So you have a background in theology. You studied theology at Boston College in the 80s.
Right. Yes. Yeah. But, well, it was a strange time for studying theology.
Sure. I mean,
maybe it still is.
That post-conciliar period.
Right. And I have, you know, in subsequent years, you know, people who were my professors have gone on to things that seem to be almost post-Catholic, I would say. You know, like, I don't know.
Do you think the training there was solid?
The thing is, it was so mixed. But it's much like you were just saying about programming. It was a situation where if you want it, you could get the greatest theological education. I mean, it was just fantastic. And if you wanted to avoid that and just kind of take peripheral stuff, you could. And I had an absolute wonderful professor there, Fred Lawrence, who's still there. And Fred's thing in teaching us theology was he had some way of – I mean, he's one of the greatest intellectuals I've ever met, maybe the greatest intellectual I've ever met. But he had a way of making sure that we understood that if it's not about Christ, if Christ isn't at the center of it, then it's empty. It's going to dissolve and go away. It's intellectualism, you know, or whatever. You may have a great career in it, but what's the value of it? And to have that communicated to me at Boston College by Fred Lawrence and some other professors, I think was life-changing.
Yes, yes. I think that, you know, and of course in the 80s I was studying English literature and then artillery in the Marine Corps. So I don't have the experience of studying theology in the 80s, but I do think if someone now wants solid theological training, that that's of organizations like the Augustine Institute, for example, Holy Apostles, and in fact some of that stuff we were talking earlier about communication technology, this is one of the great things about it. Those degrees are available online.
You don't have to
live in Cromwell, Connecticut to take advantage of the good programs there. And then things like some of the smaller schools, Christendom, Thomas Aquinas, and where my boys are in St. Paul, Minnesota, in that Catholic Studies program at the University of St. Thomas. So I think there is actually a flourishing.
Yeah, it seems that way.
Of solid theological training.
But it has to be connected to the catechesis that they got before that, because I do think many theology department, you can't do theology if you're not catechized.
Right.
And they're receiving.
Well, and if you haven't had some philosophy first.
And so you come in with a certain level of, at least in my generation, unpreparedness in having been poorly catechized.
Right.
Then you're not ready to do theology. So it's at the high school level and the elementary school level of catechesis that I do think it's better now than it was when we were kids. I don't know, but it seems to me that the dioceses are doing a better job of it.
I think you're probably right. I still think, and of course, this is why organizations like Catholic Answers exist. There's a tremendous amount of catechetical work that still needs to be done. I mean,
amen.
Perhaps as many now as three generations of relatively uncatechized Catholics.
Right.
So there's a lot of we work in the mission fields. So
yeah, that's right.
We do. So you stayed in Boston, and he went from theology to the corporal works of mercy at the Catholic Worker House there.
Yeah, right.
Did you live at the Catholic Worker House?
Lived and worked at the Catholic Worker House, yep. And that's funny because—
For how long?
I think my total involvement was about 4 or 5 years. I think 3 years maybe lived in the house.
Describe a day in the life of a Catholic worker.
Okay. You basically start out by not showering or shaving.
Finding your Birkenstocks.
Exactly. No, I'm only kidding. It's different because the Catholic Worker is a completely decentralized kind of movement.
Right.
It's different at each Catholic Worker house. Our kind of ministry there that we did was feeding homeless men and working in other ways with homeless men. You get up in the morning and you cook breakfast I'm not a very good cook. And so I would try to find, because some of the homeless guys themselves are great cooks.
Oh, sure.
So they learned to cook in the military or wherever they were, but things have not gone well. But it's mostly a thing of getting to know people, finding out what people need. It's very direct, hands-on. It's not a system or a program. It's a thing about being with people so that you may come to encounter what they need and then try to do it. Dorothy Day is all about do it yourself.
Sure.
Don't wait for somebody else to come and do it.
And very one-on-one.
Very much so, yeah.
Right.
Right. Very much so. So you want you try to treat every person with dignity and know that person's name if you can. And, you know, and that personalism, that personal interaction is supposed to be the interaction we would want to have with Christ himself.
You right, know? Right. You know? Seeing Christ in that homeless person that you are, right. that you're helping. I had a correspondence, I should probably renew it, with a woman who ran a Catholic worker house in upstate New York. And now the name of this particular house is escaping me. But their goal every day was to set the table for about 12 people.
Okay.
And that's what they, you know, and they had good china and silverware and flowers on the table and a tablecloth, and then they waited on them and said, this is what we're going to do
right.
each day. We're going to feed these people and treat them with that dignity
yeah.
and give them that social they're going to feed them, but also give them that social occasion of grace where we're gathered around a table.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's very Catholic worker. But as I said, it's in each Catholic worker house, it'll be different. Some will be a soup kitchen type arrangement. Some will be they serve the elderly. But it's very much the idea of doing it yourself as Christ called you to do it, not doing it through proxies. But I will say this. It's much like what I was saying about Boston College. Man, the Catholic worker is catch as you
– Oh, sure.
You know, it can go everywhere from, you know, kind of sort of in the Catholic tradition once upon a time to really – fully
Marxist?
To Marxist, but I meant also really fully Catholic, powerfully Catholic.
Yeah.
I went to a national meeting of the Catholic Worker one time, and it was the most motley crew because no one agreed on anything. So you can find almost anything at the Catholic Worker.
The Juan Diego House in Houston, I have a lot of respect for. The Zwicks, I think, the couple that runs that. And their stuff is very good. They're very sound on economic justice, for example. And they're doing excellent work. What is the status of Dorothy Day's cause right now? Is she servant of God or venerable? Or?
Oh, now you're – I think servant of God – Dorothy Day, but I think it's still you probably know the process better than I do, but I think it's still in the Archdiocese of New York. It's not it hasn't moved beyond that.
Okay,
so it's in the investigative stages.
Yeah, something to pray for. She was inspired by the work of Rose Hawthorne, who was the daughter of Nathaniel Hawthorne.
I remember that.
Who started the Sisters of Hawthorne? She was that's not what they're called. They are Dominicans, and they treated incurable cancer patients. Nathaniel Hawthorne's daughter, she was a convert. They're still active, but they had very specific rules. If the person had any means, they didn't or someone to pay for them. So it was only the most destitute.
Right.
And then, of course, these cases would just be the most vile, advanced forms of cancer. Mark Twain was a great supporter of hers.
I didn't know
that. Yeah, and wrote fundraising appeals
on
Rose's behalf. But anyway, she was an inspiration for Dorothy Day.
Well, if I may say, I do think that this the Catholic worker movement and things like it is part of the Catholic renewal in the same way that understanding what Orthodox Catholic teaching is and being committed to that in a way that maybe we got away from in the 60s and 70s. It's also the other side of that story is recovering this New Testament, you know, apostolic love for the poor.
Right.
You know, I do think that these are of the same thing. They are not two distinct things. They're part of the same movement in the church to be fully restored.
Would you say that your Catholic worker experience continues to inform how you live your Christian life?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Even though, if you kind of grow and develop critiques of it and all that stuff, Dorothy Day is a magnificent Catholic woman, I would say.
Yes.
And that it'll never leave me, I don't think.
And like G.K. Chesterton, she smoked.
Yes. That's right.
Though I think at some point she finally gave it up or something like that, but she was an aggressive smoker.
You know, I heard that she used to give it up for Lent.
But
her confessor told her to stop doing that.
Oh, because she was making life miserable.
She made everyone so unhappy when she gave it up. So he told her to do other things for Lent.
So from Catholic worker to Catholic radio, how'd that happen?
Well, mysterious ways and all that, sure. You know, but I do think the basic thing that, as I was saying about Fred Lawrence, my teacher at Boston College, the basic thing about Christ at the center of things, it gives a kind of order to life, I suppose. You know, you go from one thing to another, and it seems like chaos in the moment, but it keeps moving you in a direction if you have that friendship with Christ at the center.
If you surrender to providence.
Amen. Right. And so I've had wonderful teachers and mentors along the way who kind of grew me up, I guess. And the thing about Catholic, I don't know, I guess I could belabor the point, but to be involved in Catholic radio is such an enormous gift because of the power to both evangelize, catechize, do apologetics, answer the kind of desperate, lonely isolation of the modern world with the joyful message of communion.
Yeah, and I don't mean to embarrass you, Cy, but this, I think, is one of your particular gifts. You're a very good listener. It's evident.
What's that? Oh, no, that was dumb. That was
that was not set up. Yeah, no, and I know that our callers are going to benefit from the way that you have your ear tuned to their hearts.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I hope so.
Oh,
God willing.
I'm sure of it. I'm sure of it. So theology, Catholic worker. You also come from a huge Boston Irish Catholic family.
Yes.
So were any of them in organized crime or?
Probably. I imagine you don't know. See, we were Irish. We don't talk about it. We don't. So we wouldn't know. No, they're. My family, my mother and father are both from west of Boston, Milford and Hopkinton. Hopkinton's okay. Where the Boston Marathon starts every year.
All right.
Little towns out there. And so I have, I don't know, 1,000 cousins or something. I don't know. They're all over the place. Everywhere I go, I run into a cousin somewhere. Oh, yeah, we're kind of, but I also have 6 brothers and sisters. And but then my father was a naval doctor in the U.S. Navy. So we, you know, I have a sister born in Norfolk, Virginia,
sure.
Philadelphia Naval Hospital, you know, San Diego Naval Hospital. And so as with many people who have been in the Navy, we ended up in San Diego.
Yeah, because I don't detect a drop of, you know, Southie accent or anything.
No,
like that.
Right. And me, right. No, and I think when I lived in Boston, I was there 13 years. And I think I did talk a little more Boston at the time. But now I'm back in California for, I guess it's 19 years now. And so maybe more than maybe 20 years. And so.
And now you talk like a surfer.
Now I do. I do. Totally do. I totally do.
So you come from a big family and you're married with 3 kids of your own. Tell us about your wife and kids.
Okay. Well, my wife and I actually know each other from California. We went to high school together and all that. We're totally different. People who went to high school with us are like, really? They ended up together? Because I was 2 things that she was not: Catholic and nerdy. And she was, I don't know, maybe raised as an agnostic, atheist, and cool. And I'm not saying those things automatically go together, Chris. I don't want to imply that. But we were on opposite ends of the, I don't know, you just wouldn't have expected we ended up together. But we really happily did. Our first 2 children, then we were married here one summer. Our first 2 children were born in Boston, and our son was born out here once we came back. So we've known each other since 4th grade, much of that period we were in such completely different circles that we kind of came together when we were in our mid-20s, and we went, wow, that's amazing.
What's your wife's name?
Missy.
Oh, good.
And she's a convert to Catholicism, and we have a date night every Sunday night. We go to 5 o'clock mass and then out to dinner together. And but we're very even.
You go to St. Margaret of Scotland, or
no? I'm at St. Mary's.
Oh, sorry, the
downtown Oceanside,
yeah. Right? Yeah.
Right. The older parish,
right?
And so not the oldest parish though, because we have the Mission San Luis Rey up there. That's the oldest parish.
Sure.
Down.
My favorite of the missions.
Yeah. So my 3 kids are, you know, two in college, 1 finishing high school, and lovely people, and I hope they'll listen.
Yeah.
I don't know if they will, but I hope they will.
Oh, my goodness. Do you have a sort of a motto or something that sort of informs how you make it through each day? Or
yes. And this, I'm
Yeah, I do, as a matter of fact. And it's one of those things that I didn't realize it was my had become like the focus of my life. But I began to I was asked to teach a catechism type class or an adult education class on the Second Vatican Council. And of course, Lumen Gentium. You go back and read Lumen Gentium. That's the center of the whole thing. And the more then I read something that Pope Benedict had said about the document Lumen Gentium, about the first words of Lumen Gentium, Christ is the light of nations, which is the yes. Church's great proposition. And so the whole of the Second Vatican Council, but especially the document Lumen Gentium, the most important document of the Council, it begins with this phrase, Christ is the light of nations, and then, because this is so. And then following the words, because this is so, is 50,000 words on what the Catholic Church is. And I realized the more I taught it, the more I was exposed to it, Christ is the light of nations is in many ways the Church's response to the total kind of lostness of the modern world.
Yeah, despair.
Right. And the lostness that included the Holocaust just 20 years before the Council, the destruction of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, just the general violence and loneliness and all the Church says in response to that is the same thing it's always said. Christ is the light of nations.
Yes.
And then because this is so is all the rest of it. So for me, Christ is the light of nations just kind of – it's become my like – I don't know. Do you say mantra or is
yeah,
that,
no,
is
that's
that
good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's stuck, you know?
Well, and now you bring that light to Catholic Answers listeners.
I hope.
Yeah.
I hope.
Oh, of course you do. I left out one thing in your in your formation. You actually studied English literature as an undergraduate.
As a graduate.
Oh, graduate.
That's my graduate degree.
Oh, okay. I'm literature. Sorry. And you're a huge Walker Percy fan.
Yeah, I wrote my master's thesis on Walker Percy.
Some of our listeners may not be familiar with Walker Percy.
That is much to their diminishment if they don't. Because
give us the quick class.
Yes, the great Walker Percy, a Southerner and a Catholic, but not a Southern Catholic writer in the way that Flannery O'Connor is.
Right,
he's a writer of Christianity and in the modern world. Is it even possible anymore to come to the Christian faith? He himself was raised in a kind of stoic, Southern, non-religious background and came to the Catholic faith after an illness and lived it with great faithfulness. He was a linguist. He was a trained doctor, but he was also a linguist by, I guess, avocation, and published a great deal on linguistics. But his basic philosophy has to do with the he's a novelist. His primary thing is he's a novelist. So he wrote these beautiful novels, starting with The Moviegoer and ending with The Thanatos Syndrome. And I will recommend The Thanatos Syndrome as one of the great Catholic novels to anyone. And his thing is that there's a way in which the modern world has dulled our humanity, but we can still be surprised by what he called coming to ourselves.
Yes.
We can have these moments where we come to ourselves and we go, wait, there's a great mystery here. Something's going on that my life has not accounted for. And that moment that can happen in people's lives covers that's what all of his books are about, every single one of his novels.
I read Love in the Ruins maybe 25 years ago.
Many people, that's their favorite Percy novel.
I don't know if you would agree, but if any of our listeners have not picked up Percy, maybe I would start there.
Yeah, you're right.
With Love in the Ruins and that image that he keeps reflecting on that the protagonist keeps reflecting on in that book of King David, you know, cutting the rug before the tabernacle.
Right. And Percy uses these religious images, but not in the same way that, say, Flannery O'Connor does, which is she's like pushing them till they're grotesque.
Sure.
You know? He's just very subtly offering an alternative. Hey, something's going on here in this world that you modern person, you're not paying attention to.
Yeah.
And I'm going to almost in a way like trick you into it.
And then help you wonder at it.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Well, Cy, this has been a delightful 37 minutes. Again, welcome to Catholic Answers. We're thrilled to have you here.
Chris.
Is there parting words or opening words for your future listeners?
No, Christ is the light of nations. Let's try to share that light wherever we can go. That's all I've got, Chris.
Glory to God. Thank
Amen.
You, Cy.
Thank you, Chris.
Take care.